Hoot. 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 Hoot.
Here we go. Thank God you guys have probably missed this special voice. You've missed this voice. You've missed Talking Shop. You've missed the machine gun. Even though you guys have gotten a couple of quality shows from our two good brothers on Talking Shop. Sadly, I had to say it's probably two of the best shows that actually with actual real content that got somewhere. As I was listening, I was going, all right, enough of this shit. We need me and Gallows to come in and really fuck this up. It's the machine gun here, and it's a special one. You know, it's Carl Anderson alongside Balls Deep Billy, Emilio Sparks, Emilio Estevez from Young Buns fame. I haven't taken the full dive into Renee's podcast. I've listened to a couple, of course, but people need to understand me, right? I've got a wife and four kids, and I'm traveling a lot, and my ADHD is just, I mean, when I say it's through the roof, it's through the roof. And so I can't hardly listen to anything. It's hard enough to get ourselves to record a Talking Shop, let alone listen to anything. That doesn't just put us over. So I guess if a podcast just put us over the whole entire time, we're good. Carl Anderson's the greatest. Lou Gallows is the best big funny man. Rocky Romero's is the greatest wrestler of all time. Emilio's a great producer. Now we'll listen to that. I've seen that Renee runs solo with Emilio. And I always wonder, like, so what the fuck do they talk about? Then I realized that Renee's really good at carrying, a conversation, obviously. And then Balls Deep is clearly good at doing what he does. And then I go, fuck, a two-man team is great. So I need to break away from the LG and Azucar and make some motherfucking money. So here we go, baby. A side deal is in. Today, it is special. It is the machine gun. I've said that three fucking times. And it's Balls Deep Billy. Welcome to Talking Shop. There's no LG. There's no Azucar Rock. And we'll get into the reasons why they're not here. And Emilio, thanks for being the only one to show up, pal.
When the machine gun texts you and says, hey, babe, let's podcast, you drop what you're doing and podcast. Luckily for me, I was finishing up a leg workout. So I was like, I got you, Hoot. Let's go.
So the lucky thing is that you're a professional and you're able to do this. Now, and usually Rocky's ready to rock. Usually Rocky is down. He's ready to fucking get it in. But he said something tonight he just can't. He's not in Japan anymore, right?
No, he's back.
So when did he come back?
Two Sundays ago. He's been back a full week now.
So Rocky Romero, to me, has been in Japan for, I can't even imagine this at our age at this point in time. I can't imagine telling my kids and my family now that I'm leaving for a month or 6 weeks. That just sounds absurd. It sounds absurd. And that's what these New Japan, and we love New Japan Pro Wrestling, but that's what these New Japan Pro Wrestling gaijin, these foreigners, these people from America and New Zealand are doing. They're going to Japan and staying for a month.
Is that due to the pandemic, or this was pre-pandemic? This is how it is.
When I first signed there, you know, no kids, no say in contract. I mean, you're doing whatever the fuck you're told to do. So you're staying for 3 months, 5 months. And I remember one time I stayed for 5 months and I started to go a little crazy. I saw David Finley. I saw Jay White at the last TV tapings. And Juice Robinson at the last Impact tapings. And I was explaining to them that I stayed at the New Japan Dojo in 2008. And Finn Balor was there too, right? He'd go home. He'd worked his way up in the 2 years previous before I showed up. And he got the opportunity to go home for whatever, 2 weeks in between, every 2 months or something. But I had to stay. There was no Wi-Fi in the dojo. And people think that that's... And I got used to Wi-Fi. Just because, you know, in America, 2008, Wi-Fi's there or whatever, LT or whatever the fuck it was, 3G or whatever. Whatever we had then. There was no Wi-Fi. And I remember driving... I remember going outside into the... And taking a bicycle and riding it around Tokyo and where the dojo was. And kind of going a little bit crazy. Like 5 months of I couldn't call anybody. You know, you could try to use Skype. Would it work? You know, Okada would come. This is when Kazuchika Okada, massive star in wrestling now. He would come to the dojo and take me into Shibuya. And we would go to the internet cafe for like 2 hours. As I built my name up, able to go home more often, I would stay at the most for three to six weeks. And when I say 6 weeks would be that's a long stay. But 3 weeks would usually be the max. My point now is once we signed with the WWE, people say the WWE schedule was busy, but being able to be home every week, my kids, they couldn't believe that they were being able to see dad all the time, because I would be gone for 3 weeks at a time. That was their normal. So now I'm gone for 4 days and I come home for 3 days, and it's every single week. And of course, a couple here and there, you go on a little longer, but the majority, I was home every single week. They were having the time of their life.
I guess the culture there has changed, because now a lot of these dudes will buy apartments and live in Japan part time. And then when they do have an American appearance, they come here and then they're in and out. So was that the theory back then? Or you were just so broke that you were just like, I'm going to stay in the dojo. And when I leave, I leave. When I stay, I stay.
Once we started to earn a little bit of money, especially so me and Finn Balor, that's why he's one of my friends. I'm one of my brothers. I remember we were thinking we could just get a little apartment here, just live here together, live here in Tokyo, have a 2-bedroom spot, and just be able to do whatever we wanted to do. Because living in the dojo, you're there with all the young boys running around. At 8 a.m., you hear this. That's because the young boys are jumping up, running around, and they have to do whatever they're told to do. And they're up earlier than that. But, you know, we don't have to wake up at that point. The thought of like living in like a Shibuya or Tokyo or in those surrounding areas, we thought about it. We thought about it a lot. It would have been really cool, because, man, to live in Tokyo and to be able to, you know, go to the gym, you go to the awesome Korean barbecue or the awesome shabu shabu, eat that. Everyone respects you. They're fucking excited that you're there. Then you go back to your little apartment and you go to sleep and you go to the dojo and train. The thought of that easy, simple life, it intrigued us. But then we both of us are family men, right? So that was a big nix there.
Now you're there and you have Christine and you have your first son. And now it's like, oh man, now you're starting to rock and roll and your career's starting to cook with Baldo. Was there a decision to be like, yo, babe, let's maybe want to move here for 6 months to a year sometimes? Or she wasn't having it.
So think about 2010, the thought of her moving there and having to pick up and have to make new friends, and what's she going to do? How would she get around? Like we thought about it for about a fucking millisecond. And then it was like, no, because her family all was in Cincinnati. And like, can you imagine picking up and taking a family there and a baby there? And like, and it crossed my mind, because like, that would be, it would be kind of cool to at least experience that. And why not give it a shot? But then the ridiculous culture shock, it'd be too much, because there's just, Japan's a different level, man. And you can see that it makes you respect like the Shinsuke's and Kushida, who's here now, who's a good friend of mine. Imagine how much they miss Japan. Like it's got to be a fucking mind fuck. You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely. I've never been there, and I'm hoping we take this show on the road there one day and we get to do it from the Tokyo Dome Hotel and we hang out there, because I want to experience Japan with the Good Brothers. That's what I want to do. I want like the official, like to see where Talking Shop was actually born.
And it can't go now. It just can't. I told Yuji Nagata, who's a big senpai of mine, this is definitely breaking kayfabe, and Rocky might be going, we got to delete this dog, but he ain't here right now, so fuck it. Yuji Nagata's my buddy. He's my senpai. Took great care of me. I said, Nagata-san, Machine Gun, no return to New Japan in Japan yet. I can't do it. He said, oh, why? Why, Chaddo? I said, because no cheering allowed. I got to hear Machine Gun, Machine Gun. I got to hear it. I got to hear Anderson. Because right now, all they're doing is clapping. All they're doing is, and all this COVID stuff is spiking again all over the world. It's just driving me fucking nuts. It has to stop. It's got to stop. It's got to be funny. And I'll go ahead and talk, and I'll put ourselves over again, shockingly. What I miss the most, I see that there's been lots of releases, right? And lots of debuts or whatever's happened with now the world being open now with AEW's opening up and Impact has fans now. And it's been fun to get reactions and stuff. But like, I do miss the fact that, you know, after we got released from WWE in 2020, and then when we debuted in Impact in July, like we debuted to an empty studio. You know, that buy rate in July of 2020 was really good. It was really good. And it almost paid our salary, Scott would even say. Sorry, Scott, for dropping more un-kayfabe stuff. Because Scott DeMore, our boss, is one of the guys that actually listens to our podcast. Because I know that we would have gotten a good reaction. And like, I talk a lot of shit and I'm laughing, but like, you know, I'm always making fun of wrestling, this and that. But what I do miss more than anything is that reaction. That reaction is what gets me through, like, sometimes can take me out of the reality of like, if something's pissing me off, in life, the reaction from the wrestling crowd can make me fucking kick out.
But you got to remember, too, you guys are a reactionary tag team. Even as a trio, you guys are a reactionary trio. Like, the things that you guys do, people pay attention to, right? So it had to be incredibly stressful, and you didn't know, because you couldn't read the tea leaves at that point, when you signed and you debuted at Slammiversary. And I remember we did the countdown to Fucktown, and Impact gave us permission to run that teaser where you said, well, you guys finally signed after your 90 day. And you did that there. And was it incredibly stressful? Were you nervous where it was like, damn, there's nobody here. How do we gauge this? Do we gauge this on social media? Because for the most part, you and Gallows have a really good social media following. So nobody really says a lot of negative shit about you guys.
I've realized more recently, though, that the more you're out there, the more negative people come at you, right? And so the more recently we've gotten a little bit more go-home heat, but that's fine because that means you're out there all the time. And then as soon as we flip, well, they'll love us again. I knew that once that thing dropped, because we'd been having so much fun on Instagram. Once Carano called us and Kiz and the boys, when Mark Carano called me and fired me. But when I answered the call, I thought he was calling me to give him a little pump up to fire more people. I thought he was like calling me to make sure he was doing okay. That's how fucked. That's how lost we were. Did you not know that?
No.
Then he calls Gallows, and Gallows goes, "Hey man," and he goes, "I just got the phone with your partner." And Gallows said, "For what?" That's how people say they were fucking blown away. Fuck off. We were truthfully blown away.
Look at what you guys did 11 days prior, though. You know, for all intents and purposes, whether or not people could say, oh, they main evented a WrestleMania or they didn't, you guys were involved and you had a lot of screen time at WrestleMania in a cinematic match, which is there's only been like five of those things in all of WWE. And you guys were in one of them. And it's like, oh, they're here. Uncle Allen's there. Allen is so good with that company, the uncle, like they have to stay. So when you guys told me, oh, that's it, we got released, I knew right then and there it was off to the races, and what you guys were going to do was going to be monumental. And this ain't hyperbole because I'm on the payroll. Like, I genuinely believe in what you guys do and the abilities in yourselves. And even when I met you for the first time, you pulled me aside and you were like, stick with us and we're going to take care of you. And I knew right then and there, like, yo, these guys really got like something. Now they are able to release the lightning in a bottle. And to be honest with you, even when I left New York, I was kind of like, ooh, did I fuck up? Because I left on my own accord.
Yes, which pisses me off.
Why?
Oh, I'm happy for you. I'm going back to me again. I'm glad for you. Thank God for you. Good for you. I'm proud of you. It just still eats me alive when I hear people got away because we were months away from doing it. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. But there's a big difference, though. I don't have children. I don't have a wife. I don't have a house. So I was able to figure myself out. And luckily, because how everything is supposed to work, and I don't know if people know this, and I don't even think maybe you know this, but when I was at New York, there was talks of developing a talking shop-esque type program for the WWE Podcasting Network. It was supposed to be you, Alan, and Drew.
Okay,
that was supposed to be the thing. And then obviously, for some reason, it just didn't go the way it should have. And then you guys were out, and then we had to figure out who else. And I left a couple of months later, and then I get a call from Rocky, and everything worked the way it's supposed to work. Like, the universe is supposed to be doing what it's doing, I guess, is like what I'm trying to say here. But I think you guys were almost out, but you had an incredibly tough decision to make, you know? Whatever the conversations you were having with AEW at the time, or the conversations you were having with Rocky and New Japan at the time, and even Scott and Impact at the time, the company with the open checkbook at that time that you're with can talk a really good game, Chad. And you know it, and I know it. They talk a really good game, and they'd be like, okay, hey, we're here. This is what we want to do. This is where we see you. They hype it up. They really sell you on the illusion that you are going to be wanted, valued, and needed here. And then when like you sign and you're like, oh my God, this is not the thing that I believe that they were going to say. Now what? And that was what happened with you guys.
For sure. And that's why I got even more respect for, like, you know, Mox has always been my friend always. And then, you know, we got closer in WWE. So that's why I got even more respect for him and guys like fucking FTR, anybody that walks away from that shit. you know, and I don't want to harp on it now because I'm happy and I'm glad that it happened. Things worked out the way it worked out, and I'm happy for it. I'm really happy the way it worked out. But I always do like to say that it's people can say there's no regrets, but I'll throw that regret in there, and that's fine. I don't mind saying that. I have that regret. It worked out. I still regret that I didn't get a chance to fucking do the middle finger at him.
Well, I think you kind of did it though, don't you think?
Yeah, and we did. One of the biggest conversations we always said was, we just wished we could have walked out on our own accord. That's why I have respect for guys that do it. And like this guy doesn't get as much respect as he should have. And it's Sean Spears. You know, he walked away before anything really got going. I think it was like Rumble of 19 or something. He walked away before, maybe 18. He walked away before there was a whole lot of rumble of a whole lot of stuff going, to use that word. But I don't think he gets enough credit for what he did.
This episode of Talkin' Shop is brought to you by Magic Spoon. Hey, we're all trying to eat better, but healthy breakfast doesn't have to be boring. Magic Spoon has the amazing flavors you love, but without all that bad stuff. I mean, we're talking 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving. That's only 140 calories a serving. It's keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, and low-carb. You can build your own box or get a variety pack with available flavors like cocoa, fruity frosted, peanut butter, blueberry, and cinnamon. Magic Spoon is bringing back 2 of those popular flavors, my favorite, cookies and cream and maple waffle, permanently. When these flavors were first introduced for a limited time, they sold out extremely quickly. Go to magicspoon.com/hoots to grab your delicious cereal and try it today. And be sure to use the promo code HOOTS at checkout to save $5 off of your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money with no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/hoots and use the code HOOTS to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. Now back to the boys.
Where do you think a guy like Adam Cole goes?
Here we go.
Because now the Twitterverse and all the wrestling dirt sheets are saying his contract's been up and he's been, I guess, showing up and doing TV. Does he stay? Does he go? You know Adam Cole. He was part of the Bullet Club. Like, what do you think professionally? You're a professional businessman opinion. If you're Adam Cole, what is Machine Gun Carl Anderson doing?
I love this. What a segue, Emilio. I'll say this. I didn't work with Adam Cole in the Bullet Club, right? But we became friends. We became brothers for sure through the years of just running into each other and hung out in Japan a couple times. You know, situations are always different. His situation, I look at it like this, man. He's been protected since he was there. You know, I don't think Machine Gun and Gallows, or let's just talk about me. Machine Gun was never protected there. Like, you know, I got a couple little runs here and there, but I was always expendable. I think Adam Cole's always been protected. And so I think that if he actually stayed, he would probably stay protected. But here's an opportunity now for him, at the end of the day, no matter what, to get paid. I mean, get paid large. And he can either get paid large from WWE and stay protected, or he can go to AEW, maybe get paid as much as that. Who knows what it's going to be? But he's going to be protected there too, because that's a big, big sign.
Now, when you say protected, do you mean staying underneath the umbrella of NXT and always having like really good shine? Or are you like, what type of protection? Because wouldn't you want to, if you're a professional wrestler, really cut your teeth into the main roster of Raw and SmackDown? Or do you stay where you're at?
That's such an interesting question, because when we signed with WWE, we went straight to Raw and SmackDown, right? And we can always say we had a great run, had a great 4 years, whatever it was. But I wonder if going to NXT would have been better. I don't know. If we'd have gone there first and then gone up, I don't know. All I know is Adam Cole never lost to Enzo Amore in 15 seconds in Denver, Colorado on Monday Night Raw. You know, and they wouldn't let him do that. And when I say that, I don't mean that in a complaining way. But at the end of the day, you gotta protect each other sometimes. You gotta protect who your assets are. And they looked at Adam Cole as a protection, right? Or to protect him. I think, didn't he beat Daniel or go over on Daniel Bryan on SmackDown one time? I remember he jump off the second and hit a fucking jumping Canadian Destroyer and pin Brian? I think he did. For some reason, that sounds familiar.
I think that was the night where I think most of them were still stuck in Saudi Arabia.
Which further pushes the conspiracy theory even more, that Triple H wanted his fucking guys to come beat everybody. Let's be honest. And who stayed? All the sons of bitches in Saudi Arabia. You know, I love Adam Cole. I hope he gets away from WWE just because I think he could be so cool in a return to Ring of Honor, in a return to Impact, a debut in AEW, a big push in New Japan, which he never got a chance to get. But if he stays in WWE, I don't blame him because the protection is there, man. Like they'll protect him. They're not going to let him, you know, die off.
I've seen it on social media. A lot of people look at it as now Karrion Kross got called up to the main roster. He's still NXT champion. He's undefeated NXT champion. And a lot of people are nervous that, well, they kind of kill off everything that's special and awesome about somebody in NXT. A lot of people are saying the same thing that they did it to Keith Lee. Both super talented guys. Again, wearing your professional wrestling hat, do you think it's wise to stay in NXT and be the big fish in the small pond? Or do you risk that and say, okay, let me see where like the wind takes me on the main roster? Because a lot of people get lost in the sauce on the main roster. They did it to Aleister Black. They did it to Almas. They did it to Ricochet. Gargano and Ciampa were up for maybe a series of matches and then they brought them right back. So is it kind of nerve-wracking to yo-yo back and forth? What is your professional take on that? And would that magic have been there for you guys as well? Because honestly, I don't know if they got what Gallows and Anderson were. I don't think they ever really conceptualized the idea of what you guys were. I know when you guys debuted, there was a massive pop and you came in through the crowd and you hit the magic killer on the Usos. But did they really understand at that moment, like what you guys were doing, what your pedigree was, or would it have been easier to go to NXT?
We debuted in the Staples Center. The very next week was England Raw. So we flew to England. We were going to attack Roman Reigns that night, which he was the WWE champion at that time. And, you know, me and Gallows do whatever we're told. Like, that's just the way we came up. And we go, because I didn't realize WWE was a completely political, insane asylum where you weasel around and try to get different things done, which really confused me at first. Then I figured it out, and it's like, wow, this place is fucked. But I just asked, hey, does Vince want us to wear the same exact clothes we wore last week, or does he want us to wear different clothes? Because why would we wear the same exact clothes this week? Are we fucking broke? Are we poor? Or do we just bring the same clothes? Do you know what I mean? And they go, well, you know what you should do is you should go in there and talk to him. So we got an opportunity to walk in with Vince, and we sit down, and he goes, what can I do for you, fellas? And we go, well, Vince, we just want to know if you want us to wear the same clothes last week when we debuted. And he goes, Jesus Christ, that was easy. Gray for you, black for him. Yes. He's like, I wish all these meetings were easy. Ha ha ha. And we laughed. Big hug. And he goes, is that it? And we go, I mean, yeah. And he goes, you guys made a hell of an impact last week. Thanks a lot. And he goes, well, thank you. And then walked out. As I walked away, I go, fuck, that was an opportunity that we missed to maybe just talk to him. Let's brother with him a little bit. Let's just do something that could have gotten. He was almost expecting a complaint or expecting something else. That part's eaten at me forever. And that's because that's the whole American WWE mentality that I've learned to find out the way it's supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Did you ever try to get into another meeting with him when you're wearing a pumpkin on your head or you're losing in 16 seconds in Denver, Colorado? Like, you never really tried to ever get another meeting with him?
You know, we sat with him a couple times, but it was never about trying to do this or that. It was like, hey, Vince, what do you think? Do you think this is okay? Like, do you mind us being doctors? Like, should we not be funny? And he said, no, I think it adds another layer to your character. And we go, okay, you like it? And he goes, yes. And we go, all right. And that was it. We walked away. Like, because like, we weren't sure that he wanted us to be, we were booked to be doctors for a while. I wish we could talk about those Gallows next week. We were booked to be doctors. We were like, fuck, man, should we do this? We like it. We think it's funny. And then we were like, and then an agent, I won't throw the agent under the bus, but the agent goes, you should talk to Vince about this. Like, just make sure he doesn't want you guys to be too funny. We go, all right. So we go. And then Vince goes, it adds a whole nother layer to your character. And we go, all right, great. We'll do it. That's it.
But in that aspect, he's actually correct. And I think that's probably one of the presents that he gave you guys. Because if you look at what you guys do now, right, you're responsible for two breakthrough wrestling satire pay-per-views that have done extremely well via Fight TV. And if you've never seen Talking Shop of Mania 1 and 2, and you're brand new to this show because you see the boys on AEW television, first off, welcome, hello. And secondly, go to Fight TV, order Talking Shop of Mania 1 and order Talking Shop of Mania 2, and you will understand what we're talking about in terms of wrestling satire and exposing like the fourth wall and really like peeling back the curtain on certain things. And that was when I really started to take notice of what you guys were doing. Now, I was always well-versed in watching you guys in New Japan and staying up late and streaming it illegally. That's what I did, real talk. But then once I really got to see what you guys were doing with one of my best friends, I really started to pay attention more. And I thought like the testicle stuff was really, really funny. The infusion of Dana Brooke was cool as well because she was just drifting as well. So it gave you guys something. Did I wish it had a little bit more legs? Yeah. Did they put Big E in a diaper when I thought that was really funny? Yeah, I did, because it's the absurdity in it all that this is what grown men are doing. They're wearing lab coats and diapers. You have to like strip away this, oh, they're ruining these guys, or look at it as, well, maybe they're adding a completely different dynamic and pulling out something that maybe Machine Gun never really tapped into before. Two reasons why I think this stands out for me. One, I went back when you were talking about with the colognes. You were talking about the storyline that you were doing with Maria Kanellis, right? I went back and I watched that and I saw the dancing and the romance angle. And that was something I never seen before there. And it was involving you. And that gave you a level. And then I got to see what you guys were doing with all the comedy stuff. Nerds, beat up John Cena, testicle kicking, the whole nine. Then I get to know you guys on a personal level, working with you guys and just talking to you. And I've even tweeted it. Machine Gun Carl Anderson pops me every time we talk. You're a funny fuck, bro. And to see that now, it's like, oh shit. That was kind of like, oh wow, that's one of the nuggets that you can't be bitter about, or you can't be angry about that he gave you guys. Yeah, like you guys should have had better runs as a tag team champions, but that was one of the things that to me really stands out. Like, oh shit. All right, cool.
100%. And I play up the anger thing a whole lot. Like, fuck, he got paid great for 4 years there. I'm more than happy that it's all over. I'm happy. Do I wish that I would have left on my own accord? Of course. 100%. Of course. Only because of the way it turned out. But if it would have been what was promised and what I thought was going to happen, then, hey, I was ready to wave that flag for as long as possible. But most importantly now, like, I get to wave that fucking Impact Wrestling flag. Like, and nobody thought Impact Wrestling. I didn't watch Impact Wrestling, man. I watched TNA, right? Like, I watched TNA before. I barely knew Impact Wrestling was still going. Like, Scott D'Amore called us and offered us a contract, and I had to go back and watch it and like look it up and have to, you know, I didn't recognize a lot of these people who have turned into my friends now. Like, and do you get the channel?
Yeah, I watch it every week. It's great wrestling.
That's great. And it's if you can sit and, you know, if you can just like forget the fact that it's not, you know, it's not John Cena, it's not Chris Jericho. Like, just sit down for a second and just watch Impact. Like, it's a pretty entertaining, it's a really entertaining show. And I'm proud to be a part of it. And I never would have known that. I would have just, because I never would have gone to Impact. I would have signed with AEW. We would have signed with AEW for a great living. And Impact would have never been a part of this whole story. And so, Nick, it's weird the way it turns out, because, you know, us getting canned put us to Impact. Now we're doing both, AEW and Impact, and three of them, and New Japan. It's crazy.
Why do you think Impact gets such a bad rap for being really good television and wrestling?
I think TNA, because they were competition at a different time, maybe at the wrong time. And people used to always, you know, always talk shit about TNA, but they were getting over a million viewers on Spike TV. And like, you know, it clearly lost some viewers here and there, but then they signed with Access TV, and people don't even know that Access TV is a multi-million dollar channel itself. People need to know that, like, it's, you know, it's still there and it's still running hot and it's still good. Really good. It's really good shit.
one of my favorite guys right now is in a storyline with you guys, Chris Bay. I love Chris. I think he's super talented.
Dude, isn't he 24?
He's young. He's young. He's talented.
Think about that,
one
dude.
Hell of a performer. So good at 24 years old,
24,
man.
24, bro, to be on TV like that.
The women's division, I love. I love Tasha Steele. I think she is so talented.
We got to get her back on the show.
Yes, absolutely. I love Tasha. You know, Deonna Purrazza is killing it. And so there's like a really good group of people. Even what Hawkins and Cardona were doing with Tennille and Chelsea coming in. It's been really interesting storytelling where you look at companies like AEW, WWE, Impact. You guys are all just action figures.
Of course.
This is how I think of it as. And now it's a matter of, well, how do you play with them and how do you make them different? And what you guys are doing in Impact, I think, is super cool. And I told Scott this when I seen him in Dallas. I was like, listen, Scott, you know, I just want to say, I think the way you present yourself as an on-air authority, it's so good where you're not like a heel. Everybody comes to you. You piss off everybody equally and you come out smelling like a rose. It's really done well.
It's different.
It's so different there, man. It really is. And the fact that they even put the belts back on you guys, it's smart, man. You know what I mean? Like the X Division's running wild right now. Like it's a really cool time to sit and watch that company just grow and rise.
Yeah, you got Jay White coming in, the Bullet Club's coming in, there's more crazy shit coming in, New Japan is coming in, Kojima was there, Kenny Omega came in. I mean, it's nuts.
Let me ask you this, if you could put your Booker hat on or if you have any type of sway, right?
Let's hear it.
Bray Wyatt just got released. Would you make a call or send a brother text and be like, "Hey, let me introduce you to Scott D'Amore"? Do you feel Bray would be a better fit in Impact for the creative control, for the visuals, for the storytelling? Or do you think he would be a better fit in AEW? Where does Machine Gun feel Bray Wyatt could go?
So Bray Wyatt will be successful wherever he goes. He's too talented. I would love to see Bray Wyatt in the Impact Zone. What's his name going to be? Could I see, you know, formerly known as Bray Wyatt at AEW in some big ass arena on the road, of course. And trust me, Impact's about to get on the road as well soon. And it's going to be badass. It has Bound for Glory been announced now, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Where it's going to be. Yeah. We'll say it's Las Vegas, Nevada, which means the following TV tapings are also going to be Las Vegas. I got a sneaky feeling that Balls Deep Billy's going to have to come out there as long as he's not busy and do another fucking one more live talking shop. let's announce this before we get out of here. The Space. Is that the name of the place?
Yeah. Yeah. The Space LV, man.
The Space LV in Las Vegas, Nevada, August the 20th at 7 p.m. A live talking shop. Go to all of our social medias. Click on the link and get tickets. Come on. It's SummerSlam weekend. I didn't even realize it's SummerSlam weekend.
Oh, daddy, you don't even know. August 20th, 7 p.m., the wrestling world, all eyes are in Las Vegas, Nevada, and you get to see the Good Brothers live. Machine Gun, Carl Anderson, Asuka, Rocky Romero, and the Big LG, Doc Gallows, for an intimate live Vegas show. If you thought that the last two Talking Shops lives were absolutely fucking bonkers, what do you think the Good Brothers in Vegas are going to do with special guest MC Mojo?
Who booked him? It must have been the promoter that paid us tons of money, I guess. But I said, listen, we got to have Balls Deep Billy for crying out loud. So Balls Deep Billy will be in the house.
I'll be there.
We're trying to think of who else we had to bring out. Probably Laser. How do you not bring Laser out? You got to bring Laser to the house, right? If you don't bring Laser, who else is in the house? Nobody. It's going to be the boy. It's going to be Balls Deep Billy, maybe Laser, and no more Gallows as sons of bitches minions. Maybe Frankie. Frankie might have to come out.
Well, I think Vernon is over, though, because, you know, Kevin Nash wanted to give Vernon a nut shot. So Vernon's balls are at least over.
It's going to be fun. You know, this is the third one we've done now. Tampa was fun. They're all fun. Tampa was good. I think Baltimore was darn near great.
Incredible.
I think Las Vegas is going to be absolute next level. And it's going to be, I think get there about 6 p.m. We'll do a little warm up. 7 p.m., 7:15, we get going, and it's going to be fucking insane.
Yeah, because you have the VIP photo option, you have general admission, then you have VIP autographs, and then you have a VIP combo, and then if you're feeling really good and you want to spend some more of your money, then you guys give us the VIP exclusive, which is one photo with your phone plus a signed exclusive 11x17 poster, and you get an exclusive Talking Shop Vegas t-shirt if you want to be a baller. So
now we're talking. There we go.
If you want to buy tickets right now, as you're listening to our voice, thespacelv.com.
Emilio knows everything. For the machine gun, and thank you for Balls Deep Billy. We ain't missing Gallows, and we ain't missing Rocky. We don't need those sons of bitches. For all of us, y'all be ready to duck. See you next week. We out.